Sutta readings. Hello. Reading traditional Buddhist suttas and listening to people read or speak about these sacred, ancient teachings can be very helpful and inspiring. It can also help us to gain confidence that our practice is in accordance with the Lord Buddha's original teachings and recommendations. With this in mind, I have selected a few short suttas as well as some excerpts from longer suttas with particular reference to our theme of contemplating death and dying. We contemplate these things in order to stay focused in our spiritual practice, and indeed to begin the work of uprooting the very causes of birth and death from our minds. I trust that you will find some of what has been presented here helpful. Firstly, we will begin with two suttas in which we find the Lord Buddha giving some friendly advice to one of his devout patrons, King Pasenadi of Kosala, with regards to the inevitability of aging and death for all. Both of these suttas are from the Samyutta Nikaya. The first sutta is titled Aging and Death. At Sarvati, King Pasenadi of Kosala said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, is anyone who is born free from aging and death?" "Great King, no one who is born is free from aging and death. Even those affluent Khatiyas, rich with great wealth and property, with abundant gold and silver, abundant treasures and commodities, abundant wealth and grain, because they have been born, are not free from aging and death. Even those affluent Brahmins, affluent householders, rich with abundant wealth and grain, because they have been born, are not free from aging and death. Even those monks who are arahants, whose taints are destroyed, who have lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence and are completely liberated through final knowledge, even for them, this body is subject to breaking up, subject to being laid down. The beautiful chariots of kings wear out. This body, too, undergoes decay. But the Dhamma of the good does not decay. So the good proclaim along with the good." Second Sutta, the Simile of the Mountain. At Sarvati, in the middle of the day, King Pasenadi of Kosala approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then asked him, "Now where are you coming from, Great King, in the middle of the day?" "Just now, Venerable Sir, I have been engaged in those affairs of kingship, typical for kings, who are intoxicated with the intoxication of sovereignty, who are obsessed by greed for sensual pleasures, who have attained stable control in their country, and who rule having conquered a great sphere of territory on earth. What do you think, Great King? Suppose a man would come to you from the east, one who is trustworthy and reliable, and would tell you, 'For sure, Great King, you should know this, I am coming from the east, and there I saw a great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way, crushing all living beings. Do whatever you think should be done, Great King.' Then a second man would come from the west, a third man from the north, and a fourth man from the south, one who is trustworthy and reliable, and would tell you, 'For sure, Great King, you should know this, I am coming from the south, and there I saw a great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way, crushing all living beings. Do whatever you think should be done, Great King.' If, Great King, such a great peril should arise, such a terrible destruction of human life, the human state being so difficult to obtain, what should be done?" "If, Venerable Sir, such a great peril should arise, such a terrible destruction of human life, the human state being so difficult to obtain, what else should be done but to live by the Dhamma, to live righteously, and to do wholesome and meritorious deeds. I inform you, great king, I announce to you, great king, aging and death are rolling in on you. When aging and death are rolling in on you, great king, what should be done? As aging and death are rolling in on me, venerable sir, what else should be done but to live by the Dhamma, to live righteously, and to do wholesome and meritorious deeds? Venerable sir, kings intoxicated with the intoxications of sovereignty, obsessed by greed for sensual pleasures, who have obtained stable control in their country and rule over a great sphere of territory, conquer by means of elephant battles, cavalry battles, chariot battles, and infantry battles. But there is no hope of victory by such battles, no chance of success, when aging and death are rolling in. In this royal court, venerable sir, there are counsellors who, when the enemies arrive, are capable of dividing them by subterfuge. But there is no hope of victory by subterfuge, no chance of success, when aging and death are rolling in. In this royal court, venerable sir, there exists abundant bullion and gold stored in vaults and lofts, and with such wealth we are capable of mollifying the enemies when they come. But there is no hope of victory by wealth, no chance of success, when aging and death are rolling in. When aging and death are rolling in on me, venerable sir, what else should I do but live by the Dhamma, live righteously, and do wholesome and meritorious deeds? So it is, great king, so it is, great king. As aging and death are rolling in on you, what else should you do but live by the Dhamma, live righteously, and do wholesome and meritorious deeds? This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Fortunate One, the teacher, further said this. Just as mountains of solid rock, massive, reaching to the sky, might draw together from all sides, crushing all in the four quarters, so aging and death come, rolling over living beings. Khatriyas, Brahmins, Vaisyas, Sudras, outcasts and scavengers, they spare none along the way, but come crushing everything. There's no hope there for victory by elephant troops, chariots and infantry. One can't defeat them by subterfuge, or buy them off by means of wealth. Therefore, a person of wisdom here, out of regard for his own good, steadfast, should settle faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. When one conducts oneself by Dhamma, with body, speech, and mind, they praise one here in the present life, and after death, one rejoices in heaven. Sutta reading number 2. In the following two suttas from the Anguttara Nikaya, we can witness the Lord Buddha exhorting some of his bhikkhu disciples as to both the tremendous effectiveness of death reflection in stimulating heedfulness and energy, as well as the appropriateness of applying mindfulness of death consistently. Mindfulness of death. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Nardika, in the brick hall. There he addressed the monks as follows. Mindfulness of death, O monks, if developed and cultivated, brings great fruit and benefit. It merges in the deathless, ends in the deathless. And how, monks, is mindfulness of death developed in such a way? When the day fades and night sets in, or when the night is spent and day breaks, a monk should reflect thus. Many things might be the cause of my death. A snake, or a scorpion, or a centipede may sting me, and on that account I may die. This would be a hindrance to me. Or I may stumble and fall, or the food I ate may cause illness, or bile, phlegm, or piercing winds may upset my health. Or humans or non-humans may assault me, and on that account I may die. This would be a hindrance to me. Then that monk should further reflect thus. Do I harbour in myself any evil, unwholesome qualities, which are still unabandoned, and which would be a hindrance to me if I were to die tonight or during the day? If on reflection That monk realizes that those evil, unwholesome qualities still remain within him, then he should, with strong resolve, apply all his effort, vigor, and exertion, together with mindfulness and clear comprehension, to abandon them. Just as a man whose turban or hair is on fire would resolutely apply all his effort, vigor, and exertion, together with mindfulness and clear comprehension, to extinguish the fire, even so should that monk resolutely apply all his effort to abandon those evil, unwholesome qualities. But if, on reflection, that monk realizes that no such evil, unwholesome qualities still remain within him, then he may well experience gladness and joy. By day and night, he should train himself in everything that is wholesome. If monks, mindfulness of death is developed and cultivated in such a way, it will be a great fruit and benefit. It will merge in the deathless, end in the deathless. Another sutta on death and dying, also from the Anguttara, and also titled Mindfulness of Death. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Nardika in the brick hall. There he addressed the monks as follows. Mindfulness of death, O monks, if developed and cultivated, brings great fruit and benefit. It merges in the deathless, ends in the deathless. Therefore, monks, you should develop mindfulness of death. After the Blessed One had spoken, a certain monk said, Lord, I develop mindfulness of death. And how do you develop it? I think in this way, Lord. Oh, were I to live for just one day and a night, I would direct my mind on the Blessed One's teaching. Much indeed could then be done by me. Thus, Lord, do I cultivate mindfulness of death. Other monks in that assembly likewise said that they developed mindfulness of death, and being asked how they did so, they answered, I think in this way, Lord, were I to live for but a single day, for a half day, just for the time I need to eat one meal, half a meal, just for the time I need to chew and swallow four or five morsels of food, to chew and swallow one morsel of food, just for the time I breathe in after the out-breath or breathe out after the in-breath, I would direct my mind on the Blessed One's teaching. Much indeed could then be done by me. Thus, Lord, do I develop mindfulness of death. After the monks had thus spoken, the Blessed One said, The monks who said that they develop mindfulness of death with the thought, Oh, were I to live for just one day and a night, for the time needed to chew and swallow four or five morsels of food, of these monks it must be said that they live indolently, and that they develop mindfulness of death in a slack way for the destruction of the taints. But monks, those who develop mindfulness of death with the thought, Oh, were I to live for the time I need to chew and swallow one morsel of food, or for the time of breathing in after the out-breath, or breathing out after the in-breath, I would direct my mind on the Blessed One's teaching. Much indeed could then be done by me. Of these monks it can be said that they live diligently, and that they develop mindfulness of death ardently for the destruction of the taints. Therefore, monks, you should train yourselves thus. We will dwell diligently, and we will develop mindfulness of death ardently for the destruction of the taints. Thus indeed, monks, you should train yourselves. Sutta Reading 3 from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Sammāditthi Sutta, the Sutta on Right View. In the following reading from the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha's chief disciple, Venerable Sariputta, is exhorting some of his fellow monks at the Buddha's request. The subject is right view, and Venerable Sariputta is explaining different contemplations and practices which give rise to right view, one of which is the contemplation of aging and death. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Sarvati, in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus thus, Friends, bhikkhus. Friend, they replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this, one of right view is said friends. In what way is a noble disciple one of right view? Whose view is straight, who has perfect confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. Indeed, friend, we would come from far away to learn from the Venerable Sariputta the meaning of this statement. It would be good if the Venerable Sariputta would explain the meaning of this statement. Having heard it from him, the bhikkhus will remember it. Then, friends, listen and attend closely to what I shall say. Yes, friend, the bhikkhus replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this. When, friends, a noble disciple understands aging and death, the origin of aging and death, the cessation of aging and death, and the way leading to the cessation of aging and death, in that way he is one of right view, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. And what is aging and death? What is the origin of aging and death? And what is the cessation of aging and death? What is the way leading to the cessation of aging and death? The aging of beings in the various orders of beings, their old age, brokenness of teeth, grayness of hair, wrinkling of skin, decline of life, weakness of faculties, this is called aging. The passing of beings out of the various orders of beings, their passing away, dissolution, disappearance, dying, completion of time, dissolution of the aggregates, laying down of the body, this is called death. So this aging and this death are what is called aging and death. With the arising of birth, there is the arising of aging and death. With the cessation of birth, there is the cessation of aging and death. The way leading to the cessation of aging and death is just this Noble Eightfold Path, that is, correct view, correct thought, correct speech, correct action, correct livelihood, correct effort, correct mindfulness, and correct concentration. When a noble disciple has thus understood aging and death, the origin of aging and death, the cessation of aging and death, and the way leading to the cessation of aging and death, he here and now makes an end of suffering. In that way, too, a noble disciple is one of right view, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. Sutta Reading 4 from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta in the Digha Nikaya. The final sutta reading in this selection is a short excerpt from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, where we find the Lord Buddha himself giving his final teachings and instructions to his followers before laying down his last body and entering final Nibbana. In this sutta, we find the Buddha's faithful attendant, Venerable Ananda, upset by the imminent passing of his teacher. The Buddha, wise and compassionate, both admonishes and consoles him. The Buddha is addressing Ananda. Ananda, there are four persons worthy of a stupa. Who are they? A Tathagata, Arahant, fully enlightened Buddha is one. A Pacheka Buddha is one. A disciple of the Tathagata is one. And a wheel-turning monarch is one. And why is each of these worthy of a stupa? Because, Ananda, at the thought, this is the stupa of a Tathagata, of a Pacheka Buddha, of a disciple of the Tathagata, of a wheel-turning monarch, people's hearts are made peaceful, and then, at the breaking up of the body after death, they go to a good destiny and re-arise in a heavenly world. That is the reason, and those are the four who are worthy of a stupa. And the Venerable Ananda went into his lodging, and stood lamenting, leaning on the doorpost. Alas, I am still a learner with much to do, and the teacher is passing away, who was so compassionate to me. Then the Lord inquired of the monks where Ananda was, and they told him. So he said to a certain monk, Go, monk, and say to Ananda from me, Friend Ananda, the teacher summons you. Very good, Lord, said the monk, and did so. Very good, friend, Ananda replied to that monk, and he went to the Lord, saluted him, and sat down to one side. And the Lord said, Enough, Ananda, do not weep and wail. Have I not already told you that all things that are pleasant and delightful are changeable, subject to separation and becoming other? So how could it be, Ananda, since whatever is born, become, compounded, is subject to decay, how could it be that it should not pass away? For a long time, Ananda, you have been in the Tathagata's presence, showing loving kindness in act of body, speech, and mind, beneficially, blessedly, wholeheartedly, and unstintingly. You have achieved much merit, Ananda. Make the effort, and in a short time, you will be free of the corruptions. Then the Lord addressed the monks. Monks, all those who were arahant, fully enlightened Buddhas in the past, have had just such a chief attendant as Ananda, and so too will those blessed lords who will come in the future. Monks, Ananda is wise. He knows when it is the right time for monks to come to see the Tathagata, when it is the right time for nuns, for male lay followers, for female lay followers, for kings, for royal ministers, for leaders of other schools, and for their pupils. In ending this selection of teachings, I will read the Buddha's final teaching to all of his followers, also from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta. The teaching is one of the most succinct in the Sutta Pitaka. All conditioned things are of a nature to decay. Strive on untiringly.